an AA meeting.
Let's try one.
My name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic.
My name is Misty.
Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker comes from us from the Turn Lost and Found group named Tamara. Yeah.
I'm Tamara. I'm an alcoholic.
Tamara.
Wow. So just to say how grateful I am to be up here, but I'm not really feeling it right now because I am caught up in Tamara at the moment. But I am grateful because Alcoholics Anonymous saved, you know, my life. So I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, what it was like, and what it is today. I think, you know, my first addiction was fantasy. As a child, I can remember, you know, like I lived in my head or lived in a book or something. And for me, it was a safe place because I came from a house that I didn't always feel safe in. And so I spent a lot of time by myself, in my room or outside, and that was, I still kind of feel safer when I'm, you know, by myself, and struggle sometimes with that, with you know, actually being around people, and but I love being around people, but it just takes a minute to get there. So growing up, I was the youngest of three girls, and my oldest sister, she pretty much knew what she wanted to do at three. She was going to be a ballet dancer, and that's what she did. My other sister is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she actually will be celebrating 4 years in September, and then there's me. And so grew up, and my dad was really the reason that I did not feel safe in my house. He was verbally, physically abusive to all of us. And I don't know, I just kind of felt that's how it was, you know, and I feared him, and I feared him for a long time, you know, into sobriety. But I'm grateful for the steps and the women and men in this program, because it has allowed me to see him, allowed me to see him in a different way. And by the end, it allowed me to see him as I think his higher power saw him, which is a miracle, today. And so anyway, drinking, you know, I grew up in a time when my parents, I mean, they drank. I mean, it was cocktails, cocktail parties, very social. There was always alcohol. You know, I don't remember there not being alcohol. And whether they were alcoholics, I don't know. I can't say that for them. But they drank. I mean, they drank a lot, and I saw them, you know, very drunk at times. My first drink, I don't know when it was, you know, I mean, because they were very open about, like, have a sip or and so, but I do remember my first drunk, and I was 14. I drank like a six pack of some awful Pabst Blue Ribbon gross beer, and I just remember it was like wonderful. I mean, I felt like just because I was such a, like, I don't know, as a kid, I was kind of a weird, like, introvert kid. And I was super shy. And so when I drank, it was like, man, I felt like, you know, it was wonderful. I mean, I just, even though I did black out and throw up, which pretty much is my story, just a little different along the way. And yeah, and I just remember that next morning, like, feeling like horrible, and I had to go to church of all things, and with my best friend, and I just remember, I was like, God, I'm so thirsty, like, what is wrong, you know? And I just kept, like, making my friend go get more orange juice and more. She's like, I can't, my mom's going to, you know, notice something, and I was just like, ugh, and so, you know, and I don't know, like, how long it took for me to start drinking, you know, but I believe that I drank alcoholically. I mean, there was no, like, progression. I drank to get drunk. I mean, it was, I was never a daily drinker. I was more of a binge drinker. And I always blacked out. And the problem with blacking out is that I was never one that would, I was a mover. Like, I was never one that would sit around my house and drink. Like, I was always the one, like, let's do more, let's do more, let's go there, you know. And so it got me in a lot of trouble early on. I was in high school, I was in my junior year of high school, and I went to a football game drunk, and I was in there, and somebody was like, the principal is looking for you because they, you know, you've been drinking. And I was like, oh, God. And so I left, but I was so drunk, and I was like, let's go back in. And so, like, you know, and, like, I mean, that's what I did, because it was just, like, that seemed like a good idea, you know? And so I went back in, you know, and long story short, I ended up in the principal's office at, like, you know, midnight or whatever. My parents came and had to get me, and I just remember, like, scrounging through the principal's office because I was, like, going to find a lighter because I was going to smoke a cigarette in that principal's office. And, I mean, it's just, yeah, and so so I had that happen, and they actually expelled me from public school. So my parents, it was another thing that happened where I ended up, my parents went out of town for, like, their, I don't know, what, wedding anniversary to some country or something. I was supposed to be staying with my grandmother, and I was going to have this big party at my house while, I mean, like, neighbors aren't going to see anything or whatever. Big keg party. And so I left this little window open so I could get back in the house, you know, and because they had locked, you know, so I couldn't get in the house. So I was supposed to be staying with my grandmother. And my dad left this note, found your way in. And I was like, okay. So, you know, smart camera would have been like, okay, well, party's off. I was like, nope. And so, you know, I busted the window and had this, you know, huge party. Cops came, you know, and I was like, and it was, you know, it's just things were destroyed. This whole staircase, like, fell off. I'm in the emergency room. I mean, it was just horrible. And my parents came back and you know, I was like, okay, get everything fixed. And no. And so they were like, okay, you're either going to go to military school or boarding school. And I was like, no, I'm not going to military school. And so I went to boarding school. They sent me to boarding school. And they, you know, they thought that was, like, the best thing they ever did. But what they didn't know is that people that get sent to boarding school pretty much are all sent there for the same reason. And so it was, you know, it was a big party. And it was fun. I was kind of on my own a little bit. And it was in, like, North Carolina mountains. And I don't know, it was a lot of fun. And I continued to drink and got caught at, like, a soccer tournament drunk. And I remember coming back on the bus, and this guy that I was dating at the time, he was the first person that's ever said, you know what, Tamara, I think you have a problem with drinking. And I was like, whatever. And so I got caught drinking because, you know, I just didn't like to stay quiet. I mean, I would get drunk and go into, like, you know, we had this canteen, you know, and I got drunk and, like, decided I was going to go in there, you know, with there's teachers in there, you know, it's just, like, stupid shit, you know, and I would just go in there and, you know, act like nothing. And so it was, I got caught twice, and they had this, like, whole hearing and everything for me, and were like, if you drink again, you're not going to graduate. And so you know, I drank again, and I did not graduate from high school, and until they made me go through 30 days of inpatient treatment, and so I went to graduation and didn't, you know, had the whatever blank diploma book, and left there and went to treatment, and I was like, this is just something I got to do. Check that box off. I'm done. I'm, you know. And a big part of, like, my drinking and, you know, there's also other things, drugs involved here and there, but alcohol was, you know, was always, like, the first. And was I struggled with, because I knew I was gay, and I really struggled with that. And so I think that was a big part of my drinking and drugging, you know, because I could not, you know, coming in the 80s, you know, it was like totally different than today. And I still struggle to it to some degree because of fear of judgment, you know, and, it's a lot different, you know, than it used to be, but yeah, it was really hard. And, at that time. And so I went through this treatment, and these women, they like put me in this, I was like in this women's meeting, and they were like cornering me and were trying to get me to admit that I was an alcoholic. And I was just like, you know, it's just, I never said I was an alcoholic. And so I left that place, and, you know, I didn't think about like, oh, my parents paid for me to go to treatment. Oh, they paid for me to go to boarding school. You know, I didn't think about any of that shit. And so I was like, you know, just thinking about me. And so as I never was like this ambitious person, I didn't like, I went to school, but you know, I lived in my head, you know, I was like fantasy, always out, and I didn't study, and I had no motivation to go to school or do anything. I just wanted to party. And so my dad was like, no, you're going to school. And so I went to this community college in Charlotte, and I ended up leaving in the middle of the night because my dad and I got in this huge fight, and my mom was like, you know, I think it's best that you just leave while he's sleeping. And so I left and moved to Charlotte, and it was just a party. My parents paid for my school, they paid for me to live, and all I did was party, I mean, the whole time, and ended up getting in a relationship with the drug dealer, and, you know, it got really messy there, and that relationship got abusive, and I kept going back, and then not, and back, I knew I drank differently by this point. I mean, it took a long time before I realized that I was the one that was always the last one, you know, and and everybody knew it too, that I was always the last one, you know, just drink. They're like, and these people drank a lot. I mean, but they were like, if you just didn't drink so much, you know? And so, because I was always the one that would do stupid shit, you know, I'd sleep with your boyfriend or I'd sleep with, you know, and it's just like, and I didn't like us, you know? but I was that shit. I finally was just, I was like so like depressed, and you know, I'd been depressed since I was a teenager and just like suicidal, and just couldn't figure out like what was wrong with me, you know, and this relationship I was in ended, or I don't know, it was, you know, whatever, something happened, and I don't even remember what happened, but it seemed like it was big at the time, and I took a bottle of sleeping pills, and the next thing I know, I'm, like, in the emergency room, and my roommate, this guy, is sitting next to me, and he's just like, Tamara, oh, and I was like, you know, and I didn't, you know, remember what happened, but I called my mom, because they had to, you know, escort me to from the hospital to mental hospital, and I had to stay there for 72 hours, and I called my mom, and I was like, you know, I just think about that day of, like, when I called her and told her that I had tried to kill myself, you know, and, I mean, I have kids today, and I just, I mean, I can't even imagine that, you know, if one of my kids called and said that. And so she came, and I packed up all my stuff in Charlotte and moved back to my parents' house and went through treatment. And, you know, it just was this endless cycle of I'd go through treatment, I'd get a couple months, go through, you know, it's just, and you know, I had multiple DUIs actually before I was even 21. And I really didn't have a driver's license for a long time. And rode MARTA everywhere, or I would drive, you know, I got arrested in Virginia Highlands right on Ponce and North Highland, driving without a license, no insurance, and the woman that I was in a relationship, we stole a tag to put on the car, you know, from somebody else's. I mean, this was like, you know, second date, you know, and so we put the tag on the car, and I got, you know, pulled, and they, like, you know, laid me out on the car, and paddy wagon come, and I'm like, oh my God, it was so embarrassing. And so, yeah, and, you know, I mean, there was many stories, you know, many of those type of things that happened. And it just, you know, there was, when I came in to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1999, there was not anything major that had happened, you know, but it was just, I could not do it anymore, you know, and the desperation, I mean, I'd gone into Alcoholics, you know, I'd gone to meetings, but I never did anything, you know. I would sit in the back of the meeting, and I would just look at, you know, and I was extremely anxious, like, because I had drank so much in any social situation, I was so anxious. Like, I could not even say my name in a meeting. And there's some people here that knew me back then, and I was just a mess. And so I could never, like, stay sober because it was just being inside my body was horrible. But I didn't do anything, you know. I just thought, well, if I come to meetings, then it's going to get better, and it didn't. And so I came in, and in 99, and Clarkston was my home group, and I went to, you know, I went to meetings, and but then I was like, got in a relationship, had 6 months, and I don't know about you, but I like to focus on anything but myself, and so that was, you know, that was something I did, and people told me, you know, Tamara, this, you should not do this, and it was with somebody in recovery, and I did, and it, you know, I know I would not suggest it, and it took a lot away from my recovery. You know, I was still very depressed, and so anyway, fast forward, then we bought a house before a year, about a year, and, you know, so it's like, oof, okay, and then I wake up, and I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, damn, you know, what's going on, because I've just been in this, like, whatever world of relationship, you know, and obsession or whatever it is, and I had about 3 years, and my mom died suddenly, and my mom was like, it's been 22 years and I still can't tear up thinking about her, and she was my everything, and I did not have anything. I didn't have a foundation, I hadn't worked all the steps, you know, I didn't have a network, I didn't have any of that, and I just, you know, she died suddenly, and it was just, I mean, unbearable, the pain, and I, like, cried, I mean, probably every night myself to sleep for at least a year, and I wanted to die, because I just was like, I did not want to feel that pain, I mean, it was horrible, horrible pain, but I remember, like, my sponsor, I was like, I'm not going to kill myself because I could see my dad, what he was going through. And I was like, I cannot do that to him, you know. I cannot do that to him. And it was just, it was horrible to see him, what the grief that he went through. And so my sponsor was like, I need you to do what I tell you to do. And I was like, okay. And I did. And I did everything. I mean, I didn't care. I was like, whatever you need me to do. And I shared meetings. And I lived at Clarkston all day long. Meetings all day long. I stayed there. I shared meetings. I did speaker. I would speak, you know, whatever. And I did, like, H&I meetings at DeKalb Jail. And I started to get this network, you know, and this started to get this, like, wonderful life, you know, and all these people. And I'd always wanted to have kids and, you know, but it's a little difficult, you know, when you're in a relationship with a female. Anyway, so I was still with, you know, in this relationship, which lasted for a very long time, and I really wanted to carry on my mom, and so I wanted to have the kids. And so we tried, you know, all these, like, it just, it did not happen. And so the last straw was I did in vitro, and, you know, this was it, because financially I was like, you can't do this, anything else. And it worked. And, you know, today I was at the pediatrician with my son, and I just was, he's 18, two kids had twins, they're 18, and I was there because he was getting a shot, and I just, like, remembered when they were little babies, the first time I brought them in there, you know, and they were tiny little on that little table, and I just was like, God, wow, I can't believe it, you know, and so got pregnant and had these, they're good kids. I'm just, you know, I am very grateful for those kids, but I got really sick. When I was pregnant, and I had to go on bed rest at like 27 weeks, like total bed rest. And man, you guys showed up, you guys came, and you just sat with me, you know, and sat. And I was like, had to lay on my left side the entire time. Like, I couldn't do anything, shower, that was it. And you guys just showed up, and you cleaned my house, and you know, went to the grocery store, and you took me to, doctor's appointments, you know, and this baby shower, I mean, it was, like, incredible. There was, like, I mean, so many people there and from recovery, you know, and it was this beautiful thing, you know, and I, you know, we'd go camping, I'd go on vacation with all these people in recovery, and, you know, and I had moved, and you'd think I moved across the state, but I only moved from Stone Mountain to Avondale, and something changed, though, and I got, you know, kids, twins, busy mom. They started school, and I slowly stopped going to meetings, and I stopped calling my sponsor, and I walked away kind of from this beautiful life I had. And the reason I had that beautiful life was because of what I did in here, you know. And that was the only reason. But I forgot that, you know, and I thought, I'm good. I've got it, you know, and I had about, I don't know, it was 12, 13 years. And by the way, the whole higher power thing, God, whatever you want to call it, I did not have that, and it took me a long time to get that, and it took me till after my mom died and I worked the steps, and that was where I got that, and it was an incredible thing to be able to get to a point where I knew I was going to be okay, you know, and to go through that. So I just kind of stopped going to meetings, and just, you know, life was good, but what I know today is if I'm comfortable, it's a scary place for me. You know, I don't need to be comfortable for that long. And so that's why, you know, I'm here up here. This is like pulling teeth for me to get up here and do this. I do not like to do this. But I do things that are uncomfortable today because that's, you know, where I grow. And I also have a higher power today that no matter what, you know, I can go through anything. And so anyway, so I'm going to meetings, and I had surgery, had a hysterectomy, and I relapsed on actually something besides alcohol. And I didn't really think I relapsed because I didn't drink alcohol, you know, but then it got to where it was like, yeah, I did. And I, you know, I'm not going to go into details because this is AA, and I totally respect that, and singleness of purpose, and my life became hell for about 8 years, and nobody knew. And from the outside, my life looked good. Job, kids, you know, owned a house, all this stuff looked good, but nobody knew this hell I was living in. And I was like, I'm not going back to AA. I was like, ugh. And, yeah, I was like, ah, those people are crazy, you know, and, it's just so sick, you know, just the disease was just like waiting for me. I mean, just waiting. And it's so scary how that happens. And so I finally was like, all right, I'm going to go back in the shame and guilt of walking back into Clarkston and picking up that white chip was, I mean, it was just, you know, my pride, it was just, ugh. But I did it, you know, and I walked back in there, and yeah, it was probably the hardest first year I've ever had. It was hard, it was really hard, and I don't think I could do it again. And I was so, it was during COVID, and I was like, I was so desperate. I mean, I was so desperate, and I, like, we were on Zoom. I did meetings all the time, and I would just get your number. Can I call, can I get your number? Can I call you? Can I get your number? And I did it, and I called so many people. I mean, people I know, they were just like, God, damn, it's calling. I mean, because I called, like, anybody. I didn't care. And, like, I had got a sponsor. I hadn't even met her in person, you know, like, even until we did our my first step. And because I knew I didn't want to be in that pain anymore. And I knew that if I didn't do that, I was going to die. And so I did that, and I went through the steps, and it was the first time in 55 years that I was totally honest. And because it was always those one thing, those couple little things, I was like, nah, I'm not going to say that. And my sponsor today is like somebody that will call me in my shit, because I have to have that, you know, because I can manipulate anybody. You know, and she knows that. And so, and I, you know, went through all the steps, and then about a little over, when I had a little over a year, just, you know, the relationship, we were together for 23 years, and it just, we just, it was very separate, and I just couldn't do anymore, you know, and it just, it, you know, she was in recovery, but she wasn't doing recovery, and I was like, man, this, I'm going to die. I can't. I cannot do this, you know, and so we separated, and the kids, and I moved the kids with me, you know, out of this house that they, all they knew, you know, and we moved into a house. I rented a house, and we sold that house, and she moved to Florida to be, live with her mom and help her mom out, and it was hard. It was hard, you know, even though I knew that was the right thing to do, it just was, it was hard, and it was a lot of grief, you know, and just a lot of loss, and it was hard for my kids, and to watch them, to allow them to feel their pain was really fucking hard. Sorry, forgot it was being recorded. It just was, you know, and, but I'm so grateful, because there were so many women that I reached out to that had been through that same kind of situation, and that's what I love about, you know, AA, is that if my sponsor hadn't been through it, she'll give me somebody's name and say, hey, this person, you know, give them a call. And so I did, and walked through that, and but we actually lived together for about a year, and in the house, because her name was on the deed, and, you know, she wasn't going to leave, and so it was just like, you know, okay, this is how it's supposed to be. And we did it, And then it just became time to, you know, to separate. And so anyway, my kids, you know, they are 18, and they're getting ready to go away to college in a couple weeks. And that's going to be a whole new journey for them, a whole new journey for me. And I'm super excited for them, but I'm also terrified. And, you know, they are good kids. And my daughter called, she went to a graduation party for high school, and she was like, I was like, are they going to be drinking? And she's like, well, I don't know. I'm going to drive. So, and they don't, you know, I mean, they might have drank a little bit, you know, and as my person that I'm, partner that I'm dating now reminds me, Kimmer, they're not you, you know, because if it was me, oh yeah, I'd be drinking. But, so she actually, texted me from the party and was like, hey, is it okay if I leave my car here and get it tomorrow? And I was like, are you going to be drinking? And she's like, well, everybody's having fun. And I was like, you know, I'm trying to be all calm, you know, and, but I'm like, oh, God. And, like, and so she goes, and so I was like, okay. I said, how about this? Because I was like, I'll come get you about, whatever, 12:30. I said, 1. She said, well, 12:30 is probably fine. I was like, okay, 12:30. And I'll come get you, and then we'll also, you know, my partner will drive your car home. And she was like, fine. And she was so grateful for me. And I picked her up, and she was like, I don't know, she had had, like, a beer and some cooler or whatever, and she was fine. And she was so grateful that she was able to talk to me about that, you know. And I'm, you know, grateful that I've been through what I've been through to be able to talk to her about that. And she, you know, went through a really bad depression for about 2 years, and it was scary, and I didn't want to leave her by herself. And, but I have gone through that, and so I was able to help, you know, just be there for her and love her, and, you know, and she sought outside help. I didn't need to be her therapist, you know. I was able to say, here, you know, and so, and she did that, and she's like this, you know, completely full circle, you know, and it's just amazing to watch these two kids that have come through me, and it's just, you know, it's like, wow, that, you know, and just because I was hell. And they were just, they're just good kids, you know, and I just started working the steps again because I am a firm believer in being in the steps. Not just being in the steps, but, you know, I mean, a lot of times I can work steps, so if I'm not living the steps, then, you know, there's a big difference between those two things. And so I just started working the steps, and actually Al-Anon steps, but anyway, won't go there, but, you know, I do need to, yeah, I mean, I'm in another relationship, so, you know, all those character defects just come up. So, Al-Anon, here we go. And, but, yeah, you know, I'm a member of Al-Anon, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you know, I got a lot of issues. So, but you know what, I want more today, you know, and that's the bottom line, is I want more. I don't want to just, you know, not drink. Whatever, you know, and I want those freedoms that are talked about. And anyway, I think I'm done, and that's it. So,
thank you, Tamara. I heard a lot of my story and your story, and it's amazing. I love it so much. We've asked Misty to come up and hand out the chips.
Hi, my name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. Here at the NABA Blue Chip Speakers Meeting, we have a chip system to denote our time in sobriety. So the first chip I'm going to offer is the white chip. And the white chip is coming back in
24 hours. Let's see. I got a silver chip for 30 days.
All right.
I have a gold chip for 2 months, 60 days. I have a red chip for 90 days. Any more 90 days?
I have a yellow chip for 6 months. I have a green chip for 9 months. And I have a blue chip for a year. Well, I will offer this white chip one more time.
One last.
Because every alcoholic deserves one last shot.
Surrender was the last thing I wanted to do. There ain't no denying the pain you put me through. I thought I knew you so well. Guess I have to blame myself for letting you burn me till I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. Devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Sweet talking, heartbreaker, you had me believe that you love me, but you gave me one match and gasoline. It all happened so fast, nothing was left but ashes. I should have seen it coming, but I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. There are lessons I'm still learning, hearts I've broken, I'm still hurting, bridges that will keep on burning, and it's all because of you, and the things you made me do. I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole and my soul got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Oh, I didn't come here looking for the light. No, I came in here running from the fire. Digging that hole. I'm so tired.